in Wales, the Open University Wales headquarters. And I'm sat with Professor Monica Grady, CBE. I'm going to leave all the other stuff on.
Woo, 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 woo.
There's a slight hiss in the background. Let's pretend we're in a space station floating somewhere out there in amongst all your good work. Can I say that?
That's the door opening and closing.
I just saw you speak for the first time. Not your speak for the first. I've seen you for the first time. I'm sure you've spoken many times before. It was in a school. There was no riot. They were gripped. Only one person was thrown out at the beginning before it all started. Nobody threw anything. They clapped spontaneously and laughed. What are you doing?
That's because I'm an absolutely marvellous speaker and a wonderful communicator. I wouldn't expect anything else. I was talking about landing on a comet, which, yeah, I'm really lucky because the subject matter I talk about is interesting and it tends to grip most people anyway. And if you're talking to a group of teenagers, as I was, if you mention bras and if you swear a bit, then, you know, you've got them.
Game of Thrones in there as well.
Yeah, I got Game of Thrones in there, you know. So I was just talking about the Rosetta mission, landing on a comet, just my experiences, what it was like. I showed them a few film clips from the ESA website. They were really great, came up to me at the end. There was, what, about 100 of them there, year 10 they are, so age sort of 14, 15, 16-ish. They were really good. The ones who were really interested came up and asked me questions at the end, wanted to hold the meteorite I'd got and look at the model of the comet. It was just really good fun.
Am I right in thinking you started this project before many of them were born?
Yeah, I did. It's quite funny. I was talking about, I asked them how many of them were alive in 1985, which was when the Giotto probe went to Halley's Comet. And, you know, it's like, that is a dark ages, you know. I might as well have been asking them about medieval history. And then when I said that the Rosetta mission was launched in 2004, some of them admitted to being alive then. Well, practically all of them would have been. But when we got started in 1995, hardly any of them were alive. I mean, this really is a 20 or 30 year project.
And that's quite phenomenal to think. I wonder how many of those kids in that room, A, know what job they're even going to do, because it probably doesn't exist yet when they leave, things happening so fast, but also will they have the kind of job security you can have when we're just about to start a 30 year mission or something?
Well, I mean, job security these days, I mean, people don't seem to be going for job security. There's a lot more understanding that jobs might be short-term, a fixed-term contract for 2 years, 5 years, whatever. I mean, you know, I'm ancient enough to think that, you know, when I got this job, it was going to be a job for life. I think very few people think that these days. But talking to a room full of 15-year-olds and trying to get them to think, well, hey, actually, yeah, I want to be part of something that's going to, you know, build to progress to something that's going to be achieved in 15 years' time or 20 years' time. It is a bit of a big ask. But
you showed a couple of films that I hadn't seen before, and I got a little bit emotional when you were talking about Philae. There was a beautiful little cartoon showing Philae kind of leaving the spacecraft and descending down, and then you talked about the day, and I remember it so clearly when Philae was tweeting, "I'm getting tired now," and I was like, "Oh no, don't bring it back," because it was so incredibly emotional at the time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the European Space Agency for the Rosetta mission have done a brilliant job with PR, and they've commissioned this series of cartoons where they have the Rosetta spacecraft as a sort of mother and Philae as a little boy who's going off exploring with his rucksack, and you see him packing a hammer and his sandwich and a map and all this sort of thing and landing. And yeah, it's really good fun, actually, and I think it brings home to people that, you know, it's just telling the story in a different way. And Philae has taken on a life of his own in terms of, ESA, you know, I hate to break the news to you, but Philae doesn't tweet himself, you know. ESA employs somebody to tweet for him. And when his batteries were dying, there was a real Twitter storm of people following the tweets, you know, oh, I'm getting tired now, I'm going to sleep now, night night little Feli. It was just amazing.
It was amazing when you think about the other amazingness involved here, the speed of the orbit, the ability to synchronize with something flying quite so fast and actually land and make contact, and then the complications and Feli not bouncing off into space.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. I mean, once you take gravity and orbital dynamics into account, you know, it's just a few calculations. You know, the mass of the Earth, the mass of Mars, you know, where the comet should be, and you do a bit of calculations, and goodness me, there it is. You can tell I'm not an engineer, can't you?
I could tell how pleased you were. I think actually probably half the planet could tell how pleased you were when everything happened because of the video, which you did show, and you were reluctantly showed, and yet probably got the largest ovation and raucous applause from the audience of you dancing like a crazy person.
Yeah, it's me when I was saw Feli landing, and it's the BBC shot of me hugging David Shukman, their reporter. And as I said to the audience, you know, David Shukman now flinches when he sees me. He's worried that this mad woman's going to come and hug him again. But you know, it just was a testimony to the relief, the tension that had been building up, and the absolute relief that Feli had landed safely, as we thought. And then you find out, you know, 2 hours later that, crumbs, there has been a bit of a technical hitch, but it looks as if it's going to be OK. And Feli hasn't landed quite where we hoped it would. It's not going to do quite the mission we planned it to do, but still managed to get 70 or 80% of the data that we were hoping to get. We got. So it was a major success as a mission. And we're hoping it's not over yet. Now we're waiting for more of the ice to sublime away and see if Feli's batteries charge up.
That would just be incredible. I'm not going to say anything to anyone. Not that I, in my littleness, can tempt fate on such a very large mission, but I've got fingers and toes crossed that Feli comes back to life. Did you ever picture yourself when you were at school being involved in science in at all, let alone with such a roller coaster life of projects?
Well, when I was at school, I did want to be a scientist, but I hadn't a clue what the range of things that were available for scientists to do. I mean, I had very much this idea of a scientist in a laboratory, yeah, measuring things. I hadn't a clue what things I was measuring or what I wanted to find out, but yeah, I had this vision of a scientist in a white coat doing things in a laboratory. Now, you know, I don't wear a white coat very often. When I do go in the lab, when I go in the clean rooms to weigh things out, I wear a full bunny suit rather than just a lab coat. When I'm actually running the instruments, I don't wear any sort of lab coat at all. So, I just do. I had no idea. I wanted to be a scientist, but I didn't know what sort.
There was a call to action in your talk as you were faced with 100 or so kids, where you said, please, you know, consider science as your future, especially the girls, you know, think about this as an option.
Yes, I'm talking to as many school students as I can of all ages to try and persuade them that thinking of doing science, technology, engineering, it's a great career. You know, think about doing science at school and taking it up as a career, because it fits you for so many things. You know, being a scientist or an engineer teaches you how to analyse things. And once you know how to analyse things and you can look at some numbers and make predictions, you can do all sorts of things. And, you know, we need scientists. Well, we need teachers. We need really, really good teachers. And, you know, teaching's a really tough job. And teachers are just, you know, saints as far as I'm concerned. And so we need great teachers. And once you've got great teachers, then you get more pupils doing science.
What I love is, as we were leaving the school, the headmistress said, she was really quite excited. I absolutely love that. She said, "I wish you were my teacher when I was at school." That's quite a thing. So
yeah, that was an amazing thing. I couldn't be a teacher. I mean, I'm saying this about teachers, that they're absolutely fantastic. It is a really, really hard job. You have to be dedicated. I love swanning into a school, giving a talk for 3/4 of an hour, answering some questions, and then swanning out again. I couldn't stand up in front of a class day after day after day. It's just too difficult.
But 2 talks for you today. What are you doing later?
I'm talking at TechniQuest later to a more general audience. I hope there'll be young people in there, but mainly to the general public. And I'll be giving a very similar talk about my experiences of landing on a comet.
Where can people find you online?
They can find me online by looking at my Twitter feed, which is at Monica Grady. They can look at my website, which is monicagrady.com, but I don't think there's anything on it, really, very much. But follow me on Twitter, at Monica Grady.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun, and the day isn't even over.
I know. But, you know, I've got a nice cup of coffee. I'm sitting here in a nice warm room. I'm happy.
Me too. Thank you very much.